Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. We're joined in the studio by former Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy. And the Department of Justice has come out with a report. It's about to unveil its report to all to see about policing in Chicago. And one of the things that they are seizing on in their report is this notion that that African Americans, they say, are being stopped at a greater disproportionate number than are other people in Chicago, and therefore that is in violation of these consent decrees that a lot of cities have been signing, including Baltimore. And Baltimore's mayor came out today as well. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Gary, what's your thought on that?
Well, I've obviously got a lot to say about this, Ro. First of all, the fact that African Americans get stopped more frequently, we stop people based upon a number of factors, primarily crime data, crime reports. And the dirty secret that people don't want to really talk about is the fact that the Supreme Court says that we could stop people based upon something called articulable reasonable suspicion. And the Department of Justice is using a different standard. They're saying population demographic. Now, if you just consider that for a moment, having those two components at odds with each other puts the police in a place where they don't even know what they're supposed to do right now. What I can tell you is crime data, something that nobody wants to talk about. I know as soon as I say this, I'm going to be accused of being a racist, like always happens when you start talking about race. The disproportionate amount of crime victims and reported offenders, in other words, Ro, you leave here. Mm-hmm. You become the victim of a crime. You report to the police who robbed you, right? Who beat you up, who did whatever.
Right.
That's the crime data that we react to. The overwhelming
demographic. Either a witness or the victim or a witness.
Victim or a witness.
Identifies the suspect in this case. And then
correct.
The police go and they look for the suspect.
Correct. And right. if they identify a male white with a purple tie and a gray suit and we go out and we stop a black man, obviously, we're stopping the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
But we did a 2-year study in 2013 and 2014 of crime data. And the demographic of who we stop based upon the crime, where we stop them, and when we stop them matches up almost precisely with the crime data that's reported. It's not the demographic of 32% of this city is African American. It's not the demographic that 32% of the city is Caucasian. It's the demographic of the reported crime. So it's just really confusing.
So wait, let me make that crystal clear, that the idea here is that if you have in Chicago about 30-30-30 in terms of percentages here, 32-32 and 27%
right.
Hispanic,
third,
something
right.
like that, right? And so the idea, though, is that with African-Americans are stopped or arrested at a rate of about 75%, 78%, something like that. And so the argument is, and why, if they only represent 32% of the population, why are they 75% of the people being arrested or stopped by police? And you're saying is because the city, when 911 gets called, they know who they are looking for. They're looking for the person has been identified, black male, black, you know, white male, whatever it happens to be.
Right.
And in 3/4 of that time in the city of Chicago, it's an African American being identified as a suspect.
In the 2-year analysis that we did, it's just about 70% or so. Now, the problem here goes like this. I want you to think about the fact that one of our toughest, most violent neighborhoods is Englewood. Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Englewood is about 97% African-American by population demographic. Under the Department of Justice standards, they expect us to stop 32% white folks in Englewood right now. It's preposterous.
It's neighborhood-specific, according to... Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know, Anna. I don't know, because they never interviewed me, by the way, which just think about
know.
That for a second.
You were the police chief here.
Yeah,
for...
I'm the person who implemented the patterns and practices. They're investigating them, and they never asked me what they were.
Well, the other part of this that I find troubling is that part of this challenge that was initiated by the ACLU, based on the demographics we're talking about and that need to pay attention to those kinds of things and racism being part of it, it brought the stops from 50,000 stops a month in 2015 to 10,000 stops a month for police officers in 2016, which is a dramatic drop. And wouldn't you agree that stops are an important part of police work? I think of the cases even I've covered personally as a journalist, and police will tell you, well, we stopped people with a vehicle matching this description, and that led us ultimately to the person who killed this innocent person, or go on and on and on. It feels as if how can you possibly solve crimes in that environment? And some of it has to do with paperwork, the police officers will tell you.
Well, so just to be clear, I've been involved in, I don't even know, countless gun arrests. Let's call it a couple of hundred gun arrests in my police career. Not one of those people has walked up to my vehicle and said, I have a gun, please arrest me. Mm-hmm. I have to get out of the car and go get them. That's what happens. So if we're not doing that, we're not preventing crime. It's that simple. The ACLU negotiated, by the way, just to be clear, it's been put on me, a two-page ISR, it's called, Investigative Stop Report. Mm-hmm. That was implemented on January 1st, a month after I was fired.
And this is something that police officers have to fill out, or Chicago coppers have to fill out once they make the arrest, right?
Every time, right? Anytime you stop anybody.
Not the arrest, a stop.
Yes.
And include everybody involved in the vehicle or anybody.
Now a two-page report versus what was basically an index card.
Right. Contact cards, they used to call that, right? If
police
had contact with somebody, they would write down that incident. And that's one would think that would both be good for the citizenry and for the police.
Correct.
Yeah, so that, you know, that there's a record of the contact.
But we're also trying, in policing, one of the things that we've been working on for as long as I can remember is cutting down on paperwork, mm-hmm. making it easier, using technology, and giving officers more time to do proactive policing.
Yeah.
And
isn't that part of the problem? Hey, let me ask you this question, though, because one of the things that we keep hearing about here is that it's not just lack of police officers on the street. And I know you and I have talked about this for years, that, you know, are there enough police or are there not enough police? And your argument was always there may be enough police. We just have to use them properly.
Agreed.
But do you think there are enough investigators? Are there enough detectives?
You know what? I don't know what the numbers are right now. I did pay attention to those numbers, obviously, for the 4.5 years we promoted detectives frequently.
Yeah. Did you feel like you were properly staffed along those lines?
I did, because we saw clearance rates increase. And one of the best things that we did was a suggestion from detectives themselves, which was shooting investigation teams, not just Ro Khan and Gary McCarthy go out to investigate this murder.
Well, that would be
a reality show.
Quite a buddy picture there.
Yeah, I'd probably have a lot more work to do than you.
Ew. I can't imagine you want to go near everything.
I'll stay in the car. You go out there and find out what's
cold.
Going on. Yeah.
But talk about the Department of Justice, because we're going to hear something tomorrow about our police department and the constitutional treatment of citizens. And they're saying it's highly unlikely that they're going to issue any kind of a consent decree that would involve mandates. Instead, it'll be more of a plan that could be court enforced, is what we're hearing in terms of people who say they've spoken with the Department of Justice. But at the end of the day, though, do you have any feeling about what kinds of things they will suggest, either based on what they did in Baltimore or what we can expect tomorrow?
They have a format that they've used, and it's the same across the country. They're going to recommend more training. They're going to recommend greater supervision. They're going to recommend policy changes and things of that nature. If they recommend something called a monitor to ensure that the department is in line with those recommendations, that's going to cost the city a lot of money.
Does it come with a checkbook when they bring you these things?
No, it does not.
No. So you have to figure out a way to fund it.
And you know, one of the things that I find really troubling.
My guess is going to get less money out of Washington. Not that there was great money coming in under the Obama administration, but there may be less money coming in because it does appear, at least maybe it's a head fake, but the direction that Donald Trump is indicating is that the states that went for him mm-hmm. are in for some good things to happen to them. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting
to
see what happens here.
That's the usual politics in this country, if I recall correctly. So I'm not optimistic about that. But another thing that really concerns me, and I don't know if you remember this, but after Ferguson, President Obama put together something called the President's 21st Century Task Force on Policing. And he took some of the best minds in the country, most of them are friends of mine, whether they were criminologists, sociologists, or police leaders. And they went around the country collecting best practices. And they came out with a series of recommendations, and I forget what the number was. It was like 84 recommendations. And out of the recommendations they made when that report was published, and by the way, we participated in the task force, 93% of those recommendations we were already doing here in Chicago. And the other 7% we couldn't do because of either contractual obligation or Illinois state law. So the question becomes this. What is the standard that we're judging policing by these days? If we didn't have the 21 police-related shootings that we had in 2016 with hits, mm-hmm. we still had more than 4,300 people shot in Chicago last year.
Man.
Mm-hmm. Less than half of 1% of the shootings in the city of Chicago. And what's happening is the political quagmire that's been created in this country is causing people to die. You can't ignore a 90% increase in the murder rate over the last 2 years. You can't say that, you know, everything you're doing is wrong. You're not doing this right. You're not doing the other thing right. Look at these results and then say it's okay. And by the way, what was the rush to get this thing done? Do we want to get it right? Or do we want to get it done on somebody's watch?
All right, we'll talk about that on the other side. Point. But first, Violetta Pondermatic's got the WGN Trouble Spots. We're talking to Gary McCarthy.
This week on Chicago's Best, get that sweet tooth ready because Brittany and Elliot, they are on a sugar high. It's all about sweet treats. Chicago's Best this Sunday night at 11 on WGN-TV.
Former Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy is joining us in the studio right now. And we're talking about tomorrow. The DOJ report on Chicago policing is coming out. And you were just making the point right before we took the break about getting this right or getting this done quickly. And DOJ seems to be trying to get this done now under the current Attorney General Loretta Lynch before Jeff Sessions theoretically takes over in the next couple of weeks. And
that kind of sounds political to me.
Right. But I mean, isn't all of this at some level?
Yes, it is. And that's what I've been pointing out, Ro. That's what I've been trying to really get out. And, you know, I always say I can only control what I say. I can't control what people hear. And when I say things like a movement with the intention to save black lives is actually costing black lives, I get blamed with saying that Black Lives Matters is getting people killed. I said a movement, not an organization. Mm-hmm. When I say the politics is behind this, McCarthy blames politicians for spike in murder. I get blamed for the ISR. So the bottom line is this. There's a lot of components that have combined into a perfect storm that have created an environment in this country of anti-police sentiment, which is putting police on their heels and legitimizing the noncompliance that we see in almost every one of these really bad incidents. That is troubling.
Right. It is giving people motivation to be noncompliant that in greater numbers than had been before.
Correct.
The argument being that there it would be people who would, if there weren't this tonal change in the culture, there would be more compliance, essentially, right?
And, absolutely. And the best example I could give you is a recent case here in Chicago with a young man who stole vehicles a couple of times during the day, took the police on high-speed chases, crashed his vehicle into one of the police cars on purpose, causing a violent confrontation. And then when something bad happens, everybody says, well, why did the police do that? Well, I'm sorry, I have a different spin on this. A, don't steal a car. B, don't take the police on a high-speed chase. And definitely don't cause a violent confrontation by smashing your car into a police car at 50 miles an hour. Nothing good can come of that. But that is not the message we hear. If the officers violate a policy, which in this case they may have, they need to be disciplined. If they violated the law, they need to be prosecuted. But there's another component to this that's not being recognized. And between, I hate to say it, the media, DOJ, politicians, community leaders, government in general, it's changing the rules on policing left and right without working with the police. They're legislating things that are counter to what the police actually do is causing this political environment that we're in right now where the police, you know, don't even know what they need to do at this point.
Well, and I think you start to create a cycle, too, in a situation like this. If police officers or police organizations, probably more specifically, if police departments around the country were able to take people essentially on their day and see what it is that they see. Mm-hmm. And experience what they experience, I think the world would look at this, America would look at this very, very differently. We saw that now, and again, there may have been a policy situation here too. Is this the police chase that result over the summer that resulted in the firing of the firing of weapons? You know, this guy goes through. Is this the one you were talking about?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, all right.
So the actual shooting component of that was probably outside of policy. I don't have enough knowledge to make that judgment, but based on what I saw,
okay. But what you see leading up to that moment,
right,
is you see what happens when police officers are confronted with people who are they truly don't care, and they look at the world as it's us versus them. It's us versus us for half the time, and then it's us versus them for the other half the time. And to me that's kind of where you've seen this breakdown in a really, really, really difficult situation for people who just want to live their lives, you know, raise their kids, send their kids off to school in a safe environment, a relatively safe environment, you know, go out and, you know, go to their jobs, come home at night, cook dinner. Can't do it in Englewood. They cannot do it in East Garfield Park. They cannot do it safely in places right now, Auburn Gresham and other places where there's just so much street violence. And, you know, I mean, today, well, it's going to run tomorrow. I guess I just gave away that we pre-recorded WNDC Live for tomorrow, but whatever. But tomorrow on WNDC Live, I'm on the show, and I'm talking about urban prep academies, right? The schools here, the charter schools
Big
here.
Big success story.
Great success story. These kids, 100% acceptance rate to college, four-year college programs for these African-American kids on the South and West Side. And within 5 days, two kids from the West Side campus have been killed.
Just walking to school can be a problem in those neighborhoods. I mean, just doing normal things, you can't even guarantee their safety of living there. And it's so sad.
And this is not about, this isn't about police. Police didn't go out and kill anybody in these cases.
No.
This is about people killing people for, you know, being, you know, standing around on the street, or, you know, the drive-by situation seems to have gotten worse and worse and worse. And you are right, police. And I saw you on 60 Minutes saying this, Gary McCarthy, that you know, police are to a degree on their heels. There's, you know, listen, every day. And by the way, having said that, I'll get pulled over tonight. Just watch. But the point is,
don't call me, bro. I can't help you anymore.
but the point is that you're gonna that you know it's very hard to go out and do this job now. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is that more transparency by police, by allowing, you know, a lot of these guys are going to be wearing cameras anyway. Men and women are going to be wearing cameras anyway.
I'm in favor of cameras. I'm absolutely in favor of them.
Well, the city should be much more willing. And I know what the fears are here, but I think the city would be surprised if they allowed more news organizations or documentary crews or people like that to go out and follow along and see what actually goes on here. Because I think that changes things. Because I think that people want to see, and you know what, people, the good people in these neighborhoods want that, because they don't know what to do, because they're afraid of their own neighbors and they're afraid of the police. Where do they turn?
And they're afraid to report crime because the retribution that exists.
I can't even tell you how many times I went to community meetings on the South or the West Side, and people would come and say, "We want you to do stop and frisk. We want our citywide task forces back." And those are steps that, I'm sorry, they come with constitutional issues. And that's what we were fighting against. And these men and women need support, period. You can't go out and put your life on the line on a daily basis and go home, not knowing if you're ever going to go home, and expect them to go the extra mile. You just can't do it. And honestly, if you were a Chicago police officer today, we saw it when there were protests here on Michigan Avenue, officers punched in the face on video, and we can't get those individuals prosecuted when we arrest them. Yet here we are today with DOJ here. If these officers stopped the wrong person, they could be prosecuted for civil rights violations. You can't have it both ways. You have to have somewhere in between, and there has to be clarity in what's expected. You can't have the Supreme Court saying articulable reasonable suspicion. You can't have DOJ saying population demographics. None of that works. And in the end, we have to do better. We have a well-earned bad reputation in some neighborhoods because we do stupid, bad things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And where that happens, disciplinary action or prosecution has to happen. Police officers are not above the law. They're supposed to enforce it. Mm-hmm. But they're still United States citizens who have the same protections as any other United States citizen when prosecuted.
Gary McCarthy, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for
stopping by.
Ought to
be kind of fun tomorrow. And the Mayor Emanuel having to figure out how he's going to react to this from the DOJ. And what will this mean for Chicago? What will it cost Chicago?
What will it cost and how
ultimately
will it be enforced?
Yeah. So those are all questions for tomorrow. But Gary, thank you very much for being here today. Appreciate it. Also, there's a story that's just posting now at the Chicago Sun-Times site featuring Gary in an interview with Frank Main from the Sun-Times, a great reporter there.
Thorough article.